Blog Talk Radio.
Watching you as you're dreaming, the dreams I thought I knew. Your smile shows the reason I watched it all come true. Your touch is cold and distant,
Rattlesnake Ridge, a hillside next to the town of North Bend, Washington. You're part of a police squad walking through the woods towards this bunker. And what you're about to find there will chill you to the bone. On multiple occasions, you've dropped gas into this bunker with no reaction from whoever was inside. You didn't know if it was a single individual, a hostage situation, or what. All you know is that there was a gruesome scene in North Bend, and it led you to this place. You identify yourself. You let them know to try to come out with their hands up. And you stand there and wait when suddenly, pop, you hear a loud, almost what sounds like a crackle, very familiar to you. And as the SWAT team breaches the walls of this bunker, what you're about to find we will go into. Welcome to Sunday Night Murder and Mayhem, and welcome to Camp Keller. This is part of a team of voices. I want to thank Deb for everything that she does. I want to thank the A.P. Taylor Foundation for getting us this wonderful radio station. And I want to thank each of you who are listening tonight as we enter into one of the most peculiar cases in American history, the case of Camp Keller. And welcome to the show, Hatter. Hey, Hatter.
Hey, JC, how are you doing?
Very good, very good. Were you at all familiar with Camp Keller before I went ahead and set this topic up?
I really wasn't, no. It didn't ring a bell. I don't think I had heard anything about it.
Yeah, it's a very, very disturbing situation. I was introduced to it from a YouTube video, listening to the narrator and then also a retired sergeant who was the press, was pretty much dealt with the press and everything like that. Her name was Cindy West from the West Bend Police Department, and describing all the situation within the, and what happened. And let's start from the beginning of it, which was who this involved. We had three individuals involved. Peter West, at the time he was 41 years old. Peter Keller, I'm sorry, I'm getting ahead to next week. Peter Keller is 41 years old, pretty much a self-proclaimed survivalist, and he had this crazy idea to start building a bunker in the woods. He was married to Lynette, and they had a daughter named Kayleen who recently graduated from high school and was accepted to Redmond's DigiPen Institute of Technology for college and was planning to go there. They were showing the videos of her graduation. They looked like such a happy family, a happy couple. Everything was absolutely going perfect. You talk to the neighbors. All the neighbors were real into how good of a family this was. And I will go into it further, but everybody say hi to Sweet.
Hello, everybody.
Sweet. Hey.
Hey, Sweet.
Sweet, I asked Heather the same question. Were you, did you hear about Camp Keller before I posted the topic?
No.
Yep, and this is one thing I think has kind of been overlooked, even though that the story itself just is like mind-blowing and everything that goes with it. Like I said, they, for all intents and purposes, this was the American family. This was everything that you expect a family to do. You got a middle-aged husband and wife who she was going through physical problems. She got injured and couldn't work. She started YouTube videos that dealt with crafts and scrapbooking. And wild things back and forth. And Peter, in previous years, it took him several years to finish this thing, and thousands of dollars, according to what he said. But he built a bunker on Rattlesnake Ridge, and he spent time. What was peculiar about everything he did is the fact that he videotaped himself. He started videotaping himself building this bunker. And some of
what he was saying was pretty scary. It was cryptic. You didn't know what was going on. You didn't know what was happening as he was talking about it. If you didn't know the final destination of what he did and how he did it, you would have just, bottom line, you couldn't tell what he was going to do. Ultimately, what he did was an absolute, everything that was involved with the final say in this was an absolute tremendous.
He was basically a doomsday prepper.
Yes.
Yes, he was. He believed it was close to the end of the world. What was amazing is that he kept on talking about something he had to finish, something he was doing. This was one of his videos. He was 41 at the time when everything went down with the police and everything went down with the situation. But this was a video that he recorded when he was 40. He goes, "I'm 40, running out of time. Everything makes sense. The more I thought about it," remember that thinking, "the more I understand. I don't feel bad about it. It's just the way it is. Certain things happen to cause this to happen. Just kind of accepted it and rolling with it." I notice a lot of what he's talking about. He's talking about it. He's talking about the situation. We understand after the fact what that situation was. But if you are watching this as like some type of video vlog on the internet, you would never know what he was talking about. It was very cryptic, very just chilling.
Didn't you think it was going to be an economic collapse?
You couldn't tell that straight up from his videos per se,
okay.
But they did find notes. They did find pictures. Let's go into what he actually did, what it was.
Yeah.
And it was that, now we can look at it multiple ways, but ultimately he went ahead and it was April 2012, I want to say 22nd or something like that, when he finally decided to go through with what he was planning to do. This was the scene at their house. What happened, all of a sudden the neighbors were startled. The neighbors were absolutely shocked when suddenly an explosion, they described it as an explosion, took place at the Keller's home. And there was a fire, and instantly upon the explosion, someone called the fire department. And the fire department got there so quick, it was able to put out the fire, and almost within minutes of being there. They really reacted in such a quick way. But at the same time, what they didn't know is how much they were putting themselves in danger. They were setting themselves up for a possible suicide mission. Because here's what happened. Peter Keller decided to set the house on fire. He went ahead and put a gas can on a skillet on the stove. He put several other gas cans around the house and an explosive device inside of the bedroom. He expected the fire to go through the house in a very quick manner, that it would eventually catch the explosive device and set it off. Well, because of the fire department getting there in such a fast fashion, all of that stuff never happened. And they went ahead and looked around, and what happened was they found the most chilling thing within the bedroom. Peter Keller had taken the lives of his wife and daughter and expected all of that to be destroyed, all the evidence. You know, eventually they would have found the bones and they would have found out that it was a gunfire, but ultimately they never expected to see this. As I said, the neighbors looked at this as a happy family. But what else the police found was a hard drive with all of these videotapes. And we're going to be going extensively into the videotapes. We will also be looking at recordings that Lynette made through her YouTube channel. And we will kind of compare everything. And hopefully we'll be able to see and kind of feel, you know, understand. I don't know if we'll ever understand why Peter did this, but we will get a general idea of the condition of Peter Keller. Now, with all of that, would either of you like to chime in or ask a question about this case? Sweet, do you have anything to add?
Well, again, we're talking about assassination and what he was thinking in his mindset and, you know, end of the world kind of, I'm going to kill everyone and build a cave. I just don't get why he killed the wife and daughter. If he was preparing for them to live with him and do all of this, I don't quite understand his survivalist, but I got to kill everybody mind.
Yeah, and the whole thing about that is his videos never talked about them joining him. They never talked about them within that post tense situation. All he did, remember when I read what he said, he kept on saying it. Now, what the it was that situation where he was going to talk, he's talking about taking their lives. It's the end. It's coming to the end.
Well, that's my question is if he thought women in general would bring him down, like he couldn't be a survivalist, or if he could, or if he thought they were the reason that the world would end. I'm just trying to figure out his mindset of building his survivalist camp. But not having women, or was he thinking of women, or I just don't understand his mindset of the whole thing. Why he killed
the
women.
He could have set up an accident that would have claimed that he could have been lost or incinerated. But I think in this case, there's usually two scenarios. One of them, he believes that he's saving them, their soul, that he's doing them a favor. The other is to completely disappear, and with that, them still alive, he wouldn't be able to do that. Both of them are a paranoid thought, but yeah, I can't think of anything else unless, you know, you'd serve tuna casserole once too many.
Well, here's I'm going to go back to some of the words that he said himself within the videos.
Okay.
He goes, you know, I often wonder if what I'm doing is the right thing. I think it is. A lot of what he kept on doing is going back to his thinking. He at one time said it's 2 weeks before the end. And that was supposedly his last entry into his blog. And he was pretty much saying that he kept on taking retakes of that particular one, which shows he knew someone was going to watch his videos. He knew someone was going to watch this diary of what he's doing. But he really cared for what he was putting out there. He did not expect the police to get all of this from that hard drive at his house, but the hard drive was in a place where the fire department put the thing out so fast that the hard drive wasn't harmed. And that's where the police got all the videos. He had a copy of the hard drive and a copy of the videos at the bunker itself. And I think ultimately what he was expecting is people not to get the hard drive from the burning house, but to get the hard drive after he was gone. He would always say that the end was his death, that the way out was his death. That's what he believed. Now, you take, like I said, you take a look at a lot of stuff that he was talking about. He told himself it was crazy. It was a crazy idea way back then, but then he'd think about it and it made sense. He kept on thinking. He justified everything in his mind. His mind went back and convinced himself to do this situation. This was
Go ahead. Did they find anything like searching how to disappear, that kind of a thing on the hard drive?
No. Ultimately, what they found on the hard drive was the videos of him saying that he had this dream of building Camp Keller since he was a kid. This was always about him. You know, here's a common thought from some of the people who look at this. He wanted to build this like a teen. And some of them said it was at that moment, maybe in his teenage years, that he suffered some trauma where his mind was stuck in that thought, was stuck in the wanting to build this. Now, when it came to someone else being with them, I have theories, and it comes into, it's 2 weeks before the end. So he was like, okay, this is the end of the world, and
what
this
was the date?
Is the end of everything. This is me. I can't do this with anything else. And a big thing is, and sweet, you're not going to like this, but he did not just kill his wife and daughter, but he also killed the dog that often accompanied him to Camp Keller because he was afraid the dog was going to give his position away.
Well, I get why you might kill the dog because dogs are loud and annoying. Not that I appreciate that. Not that I don't think anyone who kills dogs on purpose should be, you know, sent to the chair. But dogs would also let him know when other people were coming, so he was an idiot. But, you know, he made no sense. But, again, I just didn't know the aspects of why you had to kill women, like if you thought they were, you know, the reason that the world was ending or if you thought he was saving their souls. Or he's all over the place. So
yeah,
I just wanted to have more insight, and obviously you did.
Oh, trust me, I have more insight on him and what went on and everything like that. I have quite a bit more insight on him. Let's take a little break from the talk, and let's get into Hatter. If you want to go ahead, I'm putting your poem out on the board right now, and we'll let you go ahead and read your poem first.
Okay, I'm running down the hall as we speak.
No problem.
Yeah, this guy was disturbing, this story, because it didn't make sense, like Sweet says, to off the wife and daughter. What was that about? I mean, if he was paranoid, and the dog, it seems like he would, the paranoia sat in, and when he would obsess on one thought, he probably thought he's hearing voices or something. It's just sicko. Okay. Yeah. Okay. It's called Come on. Tell her. What should we tell her? It goes like this. In a place called home, there is a phone that will always go unanswered, killed one day by what they say is a true murderous cancer. A fire was set. We will not forget. The house burned to the ground. His family was dead, the fireman said, and the husband's not to be found. Before the blaze, a selfish rage, two females found in the ash, a man not found now underground in a hole with a bag of cash. A prepper by choice, he hears one voice, he knew the end was near. Paranoia took hold, the stories now told is what he most feared. They take their lives, his daughter and wife were killed to save their souls, then to the trees where he could live free in a dug-out spider hole. How does this tale come to prevail in a small town's history? A quiet man to understand will always be a mystery.
I love it. I love it because you brought up so many good parts about what went on in his story. You know, I love in a hole with a bag of cash. Yeah, he withdrew money. It was found that he took out $6,200, withdrew it from the bank right beforehand. What was amazing about this piece, and like I said, your rhyme is always so so flowing, and everything is just spot on. I really love this, but the points that you bring up about this one, it's just phenomenal. I love, like I said, I love that bag of cash thing because you need it there. I think then to the trees where he could live free in a dugout spider hole. It's chilling what he told. His car was found downtown. Keys were still in it. So he knew that he was going. It was doing this. He knew he was cutting himself off from everything because he didn't even take his car. But one of the things that I look at is what he told his coworkers after he left work, because that was the first place that the police went to was his workplace. The coworkers said, yeah, he left and he told us he might be back tomorrow, next week, or never. He already had checked out. He already knew what was going to happen. He, bottom line, ticked that box and said, I'm done with it. I'm done with it. This is where I was going to go. I've talked about it for years. And this is what has to happen.
Hey, what?
In his mind.
I bet I know. I bet his coworkers figured they dodged a bullet.
Probably.
Could have went
You're
to the
probably
workplace
right.
And, you know, she's workplace up. Yeah.
Once again, talking about Cindy West, who was the detective working on one of the detectives working on this case. She said that when the police surrounded the bunker, they didn't know what to expect. They didn't know if he was there with multiple weapons getting ready to go crazy at any time, whether this was a hostage situation and, you know, whether he was being held hostage or he had hostages himself. They didn't know. It was all a mystery to them. And just the situation was absolutely madness. Sweet. What did you think of Hatter's poem?
I love Hatter's poem. You know, it not only is it a perfect rhyme, but it's a perfect tale. And he tells the tale well. You've got it all there for us. And it's scary and it's wicked. And you present this gentleman almost like he's fictional, but he's a real monster. And you know, you're a great storyteller, and if people don't really know he's real, it's just another really dark poem by Hatter. And that's kind of cool and scary all at the same time, sir.
You know, I think the why it's such a puzzler is he probably doesn't fit into any profiler category to say what he, to justify his actions, not justify him, but to explain, because he sounds like he's paranoid. But I mean, the often his family and the dog, and then the coworker saying the workplace comment, and then the tapes. He's probably all over the place. I mean, because the way they investigate stuff like this is profiling, right? They can tell if this is a single, like a usually a divorced single man, you know, highly educated or not educated, the profilers. And it sounds to me like he's all over, hard to define. And did was the house was rigged? I remember reading that. Was the spider hole bunker, was it rigged too? With
it was not rigged, but it was a fully capable living situation. He had a bunch of firearms there, but he also kept on talking. He made the statement that he has a way out, and that way is death. Okay, he said, ultimately, I have a way out. It's death. And that's the way he looked at it.
So what happened to him? I mean, it sounds like a suicide by cop scenario.
No, he killed himself. He shot himself.
He took his own life.
Yeah, he took his own life. Like I said, the cops surrounded. When they identified, right after they identified themselves and told him to come out with his hands up, they heard a cop. And that was him taking his own life.
Wow. I bet that bunker wasn't too far away from the house. I think
it was. He often, one of the things that they found out, and I'll explain this later of how they found out about it, but he, in one of his videos, he talked about it took a while for him to drive up there, and then once he got up there, he often spent 9 hours a day building that bunker. So this was kind of like a part-time, full-time job for him. He put everything about him into this. And when you take a look, when I talk about the next thing about him, this is probably where you're going to see this. Sweet, you asked to know a little bit more about why he did this, you know, his motivations. And what you have to do is take a look at his self-perspective. What he thought about himself, how he saw himself. Now, he often, within these videos, he belittled himself. One time he was talking about how horrible of a person he was, but he didn't blame himself. He said, it's not my fault, it's my upbringing. He did call himself ugly and said no one cared. There's people who take a look at this and think that he suffered from extreme depressive disorder, and that this was part of his whole situation. And this is where he talked about wanting to do this since a teenager. He said the past year was rough on him. He referred to himself as pathetic. He said there's no hope. He's not interested in anything anymore. He couldn't motivate.
So what was the date?
The date of what?
So this whole event.
It happened in April 2012.
You're trying to think of what was going on in the world. You know.
Well, it was 3 years after the great collapse of the markets.
Yeah.
That happened in 2009, yeah. You know. But another thing he said the working on the camp was the only thing that made him happy. He pretty much, he got, this was something that he said,
talked
I've always
it, right.
come back. I've always come back to the same person I am. I don't have anything. I never did. No money. My looks are horrible.
So the offer of the wife and daughters, because it's part, that's part of him. It's part of his life. He's going to
yeah.
kill it all.
He said, I have no personality. I'm okay with it. I understand very clearly this, talking about the camp, is the only thing I have.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder what his demeanor was around the family, you know, around the wife and daughter. He must have been spooking them out a little bit.
No, he was absolutely, you
not at all.
Look at the videos of his wife, video of his daughter. I'll go into that
really.
Here in a little bit. I'll go into that here in a little bit because it's kind of crazy.
Okay.
Sweet, what do you think about him as far as saying all this stuff about himself?
I put my poem on the board.
I saw that. I guess it must tie into this. So let's hear your poem.
Okay. Kindness is a language which the deaf can hear and the blind can see. Darkness invades cradle to grave, clock tick tocks, days deteriorate. Neophyte rots, wet land dries, no more moisture. Thunder bellows, lightning shrieks, hell released. Sun burns, moon fades, earth cracks, stars fall, hope retreats, happy fades. No tomorrow, no today, wait to end yesterday. Stop seeking no wish, keeping fake smiles endless. Laughter hurts skin to bone, lungs take air, mind empty, no one home. Coward cannot desire death, no strength to plan. Finality of last request, left to wallow alone in self-contained circle. Not understanding the words described, fear drives suicidal rest from the darkness of soul's distress and pain.
That was fantastic. Really, really enjoyed that. That shows the depth of who he is and what is going on. I'm going to get, do you recognize the phone number there in the studio?
I am not in the studio. So
I think
Adder's
in the studio. I am. Let it load up real quick. I got a bad storm overhead, so if I blink out or something, that's going to be why. Trees and fences
nope.
down.
No problem.
So,
no problem.
Okay, come on. Waiting for it to load up. What's the prefix? I mean, the area code.
It's in the Dayton, Ohio area, 937.
That's not too
high.
See.
It's not going to hang up on him.
Yeah. Let me in. 937.
Hello, area code 937.
Hey, hello.
Yep.
Hey there, this is Tony calling from Dayton, Ohio.
Yeah.
Hi, Tony.
How you guys doing tonight? Just enjoying
good.
The
good.
Show.
We're in a this is a true crime show, and we're talking about a situation that happened in Washington State called Camp Keller.
Maybe he's been listening.
Difficult.
Yeah. Have you been listening?
Yeah. I'm just recently tuning in. I just noticed the name of the show was, you know, talking about love and respect. Or I might have been a little late on that one. I just wanted to give my
that's okay.
opinion of what I think is love and respect. I was recently reading a poem by the great Ted Kaczynski, and, you know, it encouraged me. I saw elderly women, a woman the other day crossing the street over here in Dayton, and, you know, I helped her cross the street. She was struggling quite a bit to get to the other side, and, you know, she just gave me that kind of that look in my eye, and I took her back home to my place, and I fucked her in the ass.
Okay, that was great. I knew that was going to happen. I had a feeling about that one. And this is a warning to everybody else. Yeah, we're not going to deal with stuff like that anymore, but that's fine. It happens. There are people who are pretty awful
And that's why we have a
group. Yeah, we were due for that one during this show.
Yeah, we were. We've got a couple. With the name of your show, we did very well. So far, so good.
Yep, we did. But, yeah, we're sorry for that little intrusion. But that's what the X button's for, to kick people out like that. Now, where we were was we were talking about his depressive disorder, and we're talking about Sweet's poem. So I'm going to let Hatter go ahead and make a comment on Sweet's poem.
I liked it. Let me get back to it, because there's a couple of places I wanted to. When you definitely showed the deterioration of his. I mean, he told the story of the deterioration of his hope in no tomorrow, no today, wait till the end yesterday. Very, very Cecil. There's another thing that called me freaking my mind off the what I was trying to say. There's another place. Coward cannot desire death. I'm surprised that he didn't do a suicide by cop.
I'm not because I don't think that he was thinking of it that way. He completely said that his out was going to be death. He believed that if he needed he was going to take his own life.
Yeah, I want to say this correctly. It's easier to be shot by somebody else than shoot yourself. Let me just put it that way.
No, and I understand that completely. But I think him himself was that type of person. Who was ready for it. He was ready to do it himself. I don't think he wanted anybody else to do it.
Yeah, when Sweet said, coward cannot desire death, that's a very good line.
Absolutely. Sweet, do you want to add to the poem or make a comment?
No, it is what he, I think, kind of drove him is, like I said, Cradle to Grave is I think that, you know, I don't know the origins of his childhood, but I don't think that he was treated well, and I think that probably things happened in his life, and, you know, I think that a lot of that happens in a lot of serial killers' lives, that things just snap somewhere along the line, and it's just not the normal course of, you know, life.
Yeah, exactly. Now, what's crazy about this, let me just put a little quote from Lynette, his wife, during her YouTube. Because she goes, my husband spoils me. He's seen me in pain. He gave me another $20 because I'm going to the doctors tomorrow. She, over and over and over again, her videos for her YouTube talked about the love that he has for her. You know, being a person that that is incapable of working because of pain. You know, it was like night and day, the two different videos. When you watch them side by side, it's like it's a she says, he says, and they're two different worlds that he's living and then speaking about. He's living and then speaking about. It's probably that kind of blows your mind and blows this whole situation into a different level.
I just saw that this is an old piece that plugged into the show.
What's that? Oh yeah.
I didn't know that. That's plugs in real well.
Yep. And we got another person trying to do the same thing that the other person did earlier. But I'm not going to fall for it this time. This is quite the effect, you know, the effect that here's the deal. His quote was, my wife is going to suck all the money from me. But he buys her a recliner, gave her a craft room, and always bought her crafts. And she always praised him for that, saying he loves me so much. He did this for me. He did that for me. In the videos that you watch, the wife and daughter often made videos, and all you saw was them being happy, them enjoying him. The whole family, you know, this is what I said, the neighbors. There was absolutely no indication at all of what he was about to do. He never gave a single idea about what he was going to do. This is probably one of the scariest parts about the whole thing. And this, like I said, it's absolutely crazy to think about that. And so when you hear everything that the husband says, or that the wife said about this situation, what do you think when hearing stuff like that, sweet?
I think that men are very cool, or very bad men are very good at fooling their audiences. I think they know how to put on that right mask and fool the people around them. I don't think that, you know, they're capable of, you know, not fooling people. Otherwise, we'd know every psycho killer on the planet. I think they're capable of wearing that mask and playing that part. I mean, I hate to say look at Dexter, because that's not a real, you know, that's a fictional story, but that's the way all psycho killers are, or psycho people. But, I mean, you look at Ted Bundy and you look at all of them, they were charmers. They were people that you would go to. They were kind of like the magicians. So I don't see him being any different.
No, you're right about
you know?
That. They had, there's, I know when I saw one thing, and I forgot where it was, but someone said that these people often thought that they could influence everybody. They thought they were much smarter than everyone. And in this sort of situation, there was just something that was different and almost can't put the explanation to it. Hatter, when you hear about the way that the wife portrayed him, what do you think about that?
Well, it's got to be more to it. there had to be some kind of something that's noticeable. That much time away from home, you know, building the bunker and having a job, I don't know. Something missing. We don't have everything yet.
I agree with you on that. I agree with you on that so much. I was going to bring up that point. Is like you have this guy, he's spending all this time away, and what is he doing? No one ever thought about what he's doing. I know that I've read something somewhere where he mentioned the camp to his daughter, but never brought them out there. But he often, within the videos, you saw the dog out there with him. He would bring that dog out there to the place in the woods. But, yeah, like you said, it's kind of an odd situation how no one ever went ahead and questioned him and said, hey, well, you know, what are you doing during all of this time? What's happening during all of this time?
I'd like to hear the tapes.
Oh, the tapes are chilling. There was one great, great version of and this was done by a YouTuber called Explore With Us. And if you ever get a chance, they go in depth and they're able to interview Cindy West. And they had an exclusive. This was the first time she ever talked about the whole situation after it happened. And I think that
she was a reporter, or she was with the department.
She was with the department. She was the media liaison to the department. So she
liaison, right? Right.
Ultimately, right. When you're a media liaison for a police department, you know everything about the case, and you know exactly what the public is supposed to hear or not. They're the one person that will talk to the press. They're the one person that will talk to everybody and release all that information. But they understand and know exactly what's going on. And I think what is absolutely chilling, she says she has seen hundreds of cases during her career, and she's had to be involved in some of the worst cases imaginable. But it's this case that bothers her more than any other case within her career.
Okay, was she and FBI?
No, she was local. She was local. Okay. This was not an FBI situation.
As soon as they found that house rigged, I'm sure it was. The ATF and the FBI would show up.
There's a possibility, but it was mainly handled by a local SWAT team, and she was working with the local PD.
I thought the investigation after the fact, not.
That's a possibility. Here's what happened. Okay, the hard drive was found, right, along with a bunch of photographs. Peter Keller expected this to be destroyed during the fire. In one photograph, there was a picture. And one of the police officers said, hey, there's some power lines in the background, even though most of all the other people couldn't see the power lines. He goes, I know this place. I know where it's at. And based on this is the North Bend Strip Mall. And those are the power lines. So his bunker must be here or here, and he pointed to two places. And he was spot on the location of the bunker based off of just one photograph. He was the one that pointed it out. And it took them 6 days later, but they saw the smoke rising from the wood stove. And that's how they were able to locate the bunker. it was his own design and flaw of design and fact that he did not take all of this evidence with him. He was the one that caught himself. He thought he had the perfect plan, but it didn't turn out that way. What I would like to do is go ahead and read my poem, because I, like I said, one of the most gripping points to this whole situation was the contradiction of one video, his videos, to her videos, how the perception just contradicted themselves, because there's still, to this day, a lack of understanding about what happened, and that's why I'm bringing this situation out. I think it's such a fascinating situation because it still absolutely blows the mind. And I call this standoff at Rattlesnake Ridge, the Camp Keller story. Splits in the pictures, frames, stains. Oh, Peter, what did you do? Lynette painted a portrait, her heartbeats for your hand, husband, father, golden. Power lines and woods, shovels and the chainsaw, hole dug, oaks fell. Scrapbooks and plastic flowers, soliloquy of courting, streaming on YouTube, smile, glow. Bunker drew under the Washington cobalt skies, cotton candy clouds, aqueduct, wood stove. Daughter's graduation, college enrollment, semi-automatic smoke in the grasses, the weeds, ravine. Filmography of Camp Keller, ticking roll, countdown, teenage whisper. Flames in the kitchen, bomb in the bedroom, blood-stained sheets, bullet hole foreheads, hard drive blogs. Rattlesnake Ridge, strip mall, abandoned automobile, bank account bled, fugitive stronghold. Gas grenades, police standoff, pop breach, dead, why, and boom.
It sounds like a list.
Wow.
And every once in a while, he would go a little tangent to what he was saying, and he'd get some dark thoughts, and then back to the list, things to do or thoughts. It's pretty eerie.
Yeah, it runs like the perfect timeline. Like, what are you doing? I mean, your wife's painting this beautiful picture of you, like you're the golden, perfect husband, and yet here you are. It's almost like Jekyll and Hyde story, like, this is the world, then you're dark, and this is your world, and then you're dark, and you're in your little laboratory back in the cave, and this is what you're doing, and then you're back, and you're perfect, you're this lovely man, and then back in your cave. I mean, it's really, this is kind of more and more we talk about this, is more like Jekyll and Hyde come to life. In the cave, he's one man, and out in public, he's another man. It's kind of creepy. All he's missing is the humpback and the hair out of his nose. Wow. Great piece.
It kind of blows your mind when you take a look at the whole situation and back and forth. It's like, okay, where's the real person? Who's the real person here? And it is. I love that analogy that you put out there as a Jekyll and Hyde.
It's freaking me out, kind of.
The thing is,
they never did,
could be anybody's neighbor.
Yeah, but did they ever determine if he had, like, schizophrenia or anything like this?
No, I'm sure they got to file it somehow, but yeah, probably his own category. Who knows?
They suspect he had massive depressive disorder and a possible narcissistic tendencies.
Well, that would be noticeable, shouldn't it? Maybe his wife just colored her world. This is the way she doesn't want to look at anything that's happening. Or I don't know.
I'll tell you what.
Something missing.
During the times he made the Camp Keller videos, you saw other videos. His daughter's graduation. They were happy. He was laughing in them. He was, you know, you could hear his voice smiling at him, you know, in the video, almost like he was proud of her. But then you turn around and you look at the Camp Keller videos that he was doing at the exact same time, and it was like two different people talking. It was like, it just blows the mind. That's why I mentioned the daughter's graduation in there. The specific one, daughter graduation, college enrollment. The semi-automatic smoke in the grasses is he made a video. She made a video of him using a semi-automatic rifle, and they were having fun shooting it off in a ravine. And it sounded like they were absolutely happy doing all this stuff.
There's something you haven't shared yet. I haven't mentioned it, but I'm going to ask. Who was the guy? How was he raised?
Peter Keller. They're not quite sure. There's not much of a story about his childhood. They suspect he might have had childhood trauma. Let me say it right. But they're not quite sure whether he did or not. There's a mystery on his childhood, his upbringing. They're not quite sure, you know. I have no parents left. How would anybody know how I was brought up? I have no. My brother died. How would anybody know how I was brought up?
Yeah. So he was born in the 60s. He was in his 40s, you said?
Yeah, he was 41 at the time it happened.
So that would be in the 70s then. That's surprising that one lady, that liaison lady, wouldn't have, or maybe she just didn't share it, information of his past. Somebody would have had to investigate that.
They probably did, but it's hard to say. You know, one of the videos that I put up, they actually talked a little bit about his upbringing, but ultimately, there. I don't think there is enough information that has been posted about this. Yeah. This is an absolute crazy event that
with all these stories that you're coming up with, are you able to access the actual police reports?
That'd be a great question. That'd be a great question. I didn't, mainly because I'm leaning a lot. The actual videos of Peter Keller, they weren't put out until a couple months ago. The police didn't release them until a couple months ago, and the reason they released them is because the case was closed. And they officially closed the case, and they officially did all that, so that's why they were able to release the videos. And like I said, that one website that I mentioned did such a good job on pulling this actual event together and showing the portrayal and the interview with Sergeant West that I don't see how this couldn't be something or shouldn't be something that people would talk about. I think after, you know, you're talking over 10 years after the actual event, I didn't hear about it when it happened. I don't remember it. And I know that's why I asked each of you if you remembered it, and you guys didn't either. So that tells me that this was kind of an event that that happened, and even though it was an event that, you know, had such an impact, that it should have had more of an impact, I believe, that was kind of just pushed away. I think, like I said, Explore With Us did such a great job on this, and I can't give enough of applause for them than what they did. It was fantastic. Sweet, do you want to add to that at all?
No, I think you're 100% right. I mean, some of the sites you can use are amazing, and sometimes the police reports are kind of jumbled and jarred, and I depends on what you're given access. So sometimes you're not always given all the access to what you might want to find.
Yeah, I think, like I said, what would, you know, ultimately we have to ask ourselves, was there any signs that he was going to do this?
I just pulled up the little bit on his daughter.
Yeah.
It says, Peter Keller, the survivalist who killed his wife and 18-year-old daughter in April, he found a videotape that the North Bend man made describing his plan for, quote, the end, unquote. His ramblings tried to justify his actions, talking in a chilling, matter-of-fact way how he would commit his crimes. Keller kept the tape among the stockpile of ammunition, weapons, improvised explosive devices, and his bulletproof vest. Part goes. I just read where the daughter had a week before, or 2 weeks before it happened, the daughter went, they found the tape that he kept referring to, the end, and she said something to her boyfriend, had mentioned that to her boyfriend.
That's interesting. So, I did not read anything about that, but what I want to mention to you, when he took the multiple takes at the end, when he taped himself, he did mention it was 2 weeks before the end. Now, a lot of people are looking at this as the end of the world or the end of whatever, you know, but the way I see this was the end was the moment that he took the lives of his daughter and his wife. So it was, the end was their end. It was the end of his marriage. There was one chilling thing that his wife said in a video when she said that he, you know, I can't work anymore, and a lot of other men would leave. And this clicked to me. But there's something about him in his heart and the thing death do us part, you know, that he wouldn't leave. So maybe in his mind, their deaths were the only way to get out of his marriage. Another possibility to look at it like that, which is kind of another scary kind of thought behind this whole situation.
You think? I don't know. Then why do I still have his daughter? That's the whole thing.
Yeah, I understand what you're saying about that, but ultimately he kept on saying, then I thought it was crazy, then I thought about it, and he kept on talking himself into it. He kept on thinking himself into it. You know, I always keep coming back to the same person I am. You know, he was, like I said, there was a total contradiction of who he is.
Yeah, you just don't know. I think he's so all over. To try to get into the mind of this guy, I think you need a literally a chart, various categories. I couldn't even tell you. He's so all over.
Yeah.
He's weird to me.
I agree with you. There is a situation where this guy is truly all over the place. You don't know who's the next Peter Keller that's going to show up. Is it this survivalist who's digging a hole in the ground? And but he could have his goal. He said this. My goal is 10 years. He was planning to live inside Camp Keller for 10 years. You know, he said, I don't know, this could be a couple days, it could be weeks. My goal is 10 years. But ultimately, I have an out, and that's death.
Yeah, I found this thing. It says, Caitlin, the daughter, last talked to her boyfriend April 21st, but everything seemed fine, according to investigators' cell records. So, oh, I skipped the start. It does mention that she did mention she found a picture of the bunker and one of the videotapes, and they made I'm sure a worrisome, and something was going on, excuse me, to her boyfriend. So. There was some kind of red flags being popped up, but
that was the day before everything happened, because I think it happened on the 22nd.
Yeah, was the 22nd. That was just the last time she had talked to her boyfriend. But he said weeks before she had mentioned that she had seen the photograph of the bunker and the tape.
I did read something that she did know about the bunker, but he gave himself away through that photograph, and that's how they found out about where it was at.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I can tell right now that this is kind of blowing Sweet's mind.
It really is. This guy's driving me nuts.
You're trying to wrap your head around this, and I can see that. I don't know if there's a way to wrap your head. Anybody can wrap their head around
Bundy, he had a type. He wanted to go. He wanted to do this. He had this. He had that. You know, Jeffrey Dahmer, he wanted this. And he had this. He had that. You know, but this guy is like, one minute I'm this person, next minute I'm this person. This is who I am in public. He's just such a manipulative son of a bitch. Then he hides. He's like a little snake. And these are kind of liars that get under my skin, because you don't know who they are and you don't know how they deal. And you don't have, and you know, he's like somebody I would like to just get in, rip his little head off, because I can't stand the white lies. So him being like this guy in front of everybody, oh, I love you, I love you, I love you. And then going behind your back and doing all that. It's driving me nuts. Can't stand it.
Yeah, no, and that's fine. The way he talked, you know, there was moments, if you watched his body language, if you watched his face, it was, you know, he was okay with everything. But then sometimes when you look at the way he talked, he was almost ready to break down and cry in his videos. And you saw that there was some pain in some of the videos when he was talking. There was breakup of the voice. There was different ways that he was portraying himself. His body language was so strange in some of the videos. Yeah.
I guess I hate pretenders, and I hate people that could be like, I don't know, he would be like one to get one over on me, and that's something he aggravates me. I don't know why, because he's a psycho. You know, it's like, why were you letting a psycho just get to you? And I don't know why this guy gets to me.
No, I agree, because there's so many questions behind this. I think that's why Cindy West said that that out of everything that she's ever seen in her career, this was the only case that really bothered her and got to her.
I must have that kind of mind like that agent did. It just bothers me. He bothers me.
Yep, and that's fine. Well, I'm going to have you read Deb's poem. I think we're going to – I don't see her showing up quite yet, so I don't think we're going to get a chance to hear her read.
Yeah, I don't think
that's
going to be around. So
I'm going to have you go ahead and read her poem.
Okay.
I love the title.
Okay. I love her, the way she writes. Camp Keller, Doomsday Cellar Dweller Seeks Solitude by Deborah Lee. Once upon a mountainside on Rattlesnake Ridge, nestled in trees of thick wooded lot, a man seeking a sanctuary of darkness digs his bunker as he vlogs his plots. The Doomsday Cellar Dweller stores supplies like food and vodka, guns and ammo, adding a wood-burning stove, a generator, and a cache of money in the space below. As he loads in a winemaker, gasoline, and beans, he adds plans to torch his house in his diary vlogs, adding plans of robbing banks and pharmacies to fund the supplies for the bunker of dirt and logs. This doomsday killer fuels a raging fire, then flames swallow the home and his family. Bodies of his wife and daughter are found in the ashes. He shoots himself in the underground sanctuary. End poem.
Excellent. One thing that was interesting is, and I didn't mention this, is adding plans of robbing banks and pharmacies. In one of his blogs that he went ahead and videotaped, he actually said, and it's something to this effect, he goes, I guess I'll just rob banks, and I'll stay out here and rob banks and pharmacies. At least it's going to be more fun. What the heck? What the heck is that? What, you know, how do you call that fun? How do you say that?
I don't know.
It was almost the only time he put a smirk. This whole thing, it was like, are these videotapes for real? Are they honestly for real? Or is this whole thing just something staged and planned to where he wanted to be known in infamy? He wanted to be known throughout eternity. Did he want the publicity after death? What was in his mind? Why did he take three takes to do that last part? Was it really important for him to be seen? I'm like, I'm glad she brought that up, because every single one of these poems that you guys put out, it just helps me remind things. Yes, he brought all this food down there. He had a stash of vodka. He had guns and ammo. He made the wood-burning stove. He diverted the creek to get running water in this place that he lived. It was a genius whole thing, but the motive for him doing this is just beyond comprehension. Sweet, what do you think about that whole thing?
I love the poem. I mean, I think this man thinks he's Jesus. I can do what I want, walk on water, rob the banks, take this, do that. I am Jesus. I really think he thinks he's Christ. That's the only thing that describes his ego, his narcissism, his, I'm going to do this, and the world's just going to walk on water, and that's the way it's going to be. He's God. That's all there is to it. He's just God. He's God.
Cindy West, Sergeant West, one of her last things that she said in her interview, they said that there was a sigh of relief after this whole situation happened, because they didn't have to deal with this anymore.
the whole thing just was something that, okay, it is hard to wrap our mind around what happened. It is hard to wrap our mind around a motivation. But ultimately, it's just like, does anyone really know what happened? Hatter, what do you think?
Did we lose the Hatter?
Hatter should be... Hatter?
Unmuted. Okay. Unmuted. Yeah, I like the way she brought up the sanctuary. It seemed like he had to take somebody with people with him. But he is in search of peace in some, you know, messed up way. The more I read, I kept reading a little more on the after the fact, and it seems like he was being pushed in many, many different ways. I think he had many personalities that are all joining up when he was building the bunker and making the tapes, defeating that alter ego, that personality.
There was
something more in his in childhood. You know,
to say. Was this an act of a person who was still caught up as a teenager? Was this an act of someone who seriously had a depressive disorder? Is this an act of someone who had multiple personalities? Is this an act of someone who was absolutely and utterly vile and evil? Was this a situation of someone who just wanted to be seen in a spotlight and thought, you know, that they deserved this? What was the situation behind Peter Keller and his mind and him doing this? I think, you know, when you take
you,
a
you
look
would think
at this
it, you
old,
think it was hate. You,
go ahead.
When it's a hatred. Usually it's a hatred when somebody takes, you know, multiple lives. But could be that there are those that kill when they actually love the person. For example, can't stand losing them. So they.
I understand. Okay, let me tell you. I'm going to put this as one of the last thoughts to you guys.
Okay.
You know how his wife kept on saying that he's a wonderful husband. He keeps giving this thing to me. You've got to remember, he said that she was going to suck all the money out of him. That was the only he said talked about that. And he also said, I'm not going to need to deal with Lynette and Kayleen. Those are the only two times he ever mentioned his wife and his daughter out of all of the videos. He never mentioned it. All he said was...
How many were there? How many were there?
What's that?
Did they say how many?
There was a
videos.
Bunch. There was a bunch. And they have been released... And like I said, this Explore With Us has done an excellent job on showing a lot of that and showing the contradictions in his life compared to what he said. I really suggest if people are more interested in this case, check out the YouTube channel Explore With Us and check out their they put it out about 2 months ago, but their investigation into this situation. All right. Is there any last things that you guys would like to say, and then we'll talk about next show? Sweet, is there anything else that you'd like to say about this?
No, I'm good. I'm all set out. Thank you.
It really got to you, didn't it?
Yeah, I'm good.
Hatter, do you want to say any last words?
Well, it goes along with the for me, it's almost you count your blessings on how you were raised. You didn't have such a dark element, you know, somewhere in your family tree or something that's going to take your life. I mean, it's just sad, tragic, and disturbing all at the same time.
Absolutely. Well, I'm glad that I was able to bring you guys the story of Camp Keller, and it is a story that is going to, I think, for the long run, be stoked in mystery and befuddlement, because that's what it is. Well, next show in 2 weeks, this is for Sweet Pea, we are going to be going into some serial killer couples, some of the worst couples ever, and I'm calling it more evil than Bonnie and Clyde. We will be discussing, I got five available for everybody to check out. We got the Moores murders from the United Kingdom. We got David and Catherine Burney from Perth, Australia. And then from the United States, we have the Lonely Hearts Killers, Raymond Fernandez and Martha Beck. And we got the oldest couple to ever be sentenced to death, Ray and Faye Copeland. And then we have probably one of the most disturbing cases I've ever read about, I've ever seen about, Fred and Rosemary West, which is just beyond. So in two
check
weeks,
out the Gallegos.
I know them as well, but I'm going to stick with these five because these five,
that's cool.
There's something about these five that really interests me.
Yeah.
I know Sweet is super excited about this show.
I know.
Aren't you, Sweet?
Oh, my God. Talk about what I don't understand is one, let alone people in love doing this. Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh.
And have you guys heard about all those ones that I'm bringing up? Is there any that you haven't heard about?
I've heard a couple of them. The one that you said is the wickedest you've ever heard. That's the one that made me say to you, hey, what do you think of this? So I'm glad you picked them.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Fred and Rosemary West. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Well, on the 18th, join me for that. And I appreciate everyone for listening. I appreciate for you guys calling in. And for the ones that called in to cause problems, we do not appreciate that. And we will boot you off. So it's fine.
Yeah.
But we are excited. I'm excited about next on the 18th as well. So join me back on the 18th, 9:30 Eastern time. And with that, good night, everybody. And take care.
I'm going to run through tomorrow night. We have Personal Prompt Monday with Deb.
Okay.
Don't forget that. And then we have, let me see.
Is it Rack?
It's Rack, I believe.
Wait a minute. What's the date? Is it the 13th or the 6th?
No, tomorrow is Personal Prompt. And then I don't know if we have anybody on Tuesday. That's what I'm looking for. I think we're off on Tuesday.
No, well, my music show is on the 13th.
Okay, that's fine. We'll get there. It's only the 5th tomorrow. The 5th is, you got me. The 6th, the Monday is Deb. And prompts. Wednesday is
Rack and Tour.
Thanks, guys. Rack and Tour. Thursday is me, and it is Dark Valentine's. And
I got one for you, man.
And we're talking about the origins of Valentine's Day, which is fabulous because we're talking about the Romans. And they used to whip the women. Women would line up to be smacked in the face because they used to believe that it would make them fertile. They would kill dogs and goats and all kinds of stuff. It was awful. So it's celebrate the Roman way or bring me dark love poems, anything dark about Valentine's Day and all that. And then we have after that, I believe Linda postponed. I'm not sure if that's the rain date for her or not. And then I think that's as far as I'm going to go. And we'll go from there after that, you guys. So get ready for
and
a
I think
heck of a week. Go ahead.
Yeah, sweet. Your topic says 2-7. I think it's supposed to say 2-8.
Is it?
Yep.
It's Thursday the 8th?
2-7 is
Racks,
yeah.
Yeah, it should be 2-8. You're correct. Sorry about that. I'll get that fixed. Thanks for seeing that. Thank you, sir.
No problem.
All right, everybody.
No problem. I do have a poem for you about a particular dark Valentine, but yeah. And
I'll all right,
and like I said, good night, everybody. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks, everybody. Have a good night.